Indeed. We've got Joseph Farrell joining Richard C. Hoagland as we now will talk more about the secret space program, Are We the Martians? And some other fascinating things right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie along with Richard C. Hoagland, now joined with Joseph Farrell, who had an early interest in physics, mathematics, and even music. Until his days in college, he had an accelerated mathematics program where he then became interested in ancient texts, and he has a PhD. He is the author of the Giza Death Star Trilogy, Reich of the Black Sun, and the SS Brotherhood of the Bell. Here he is on Coast to Coast, back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Joseph, how are you?
Pretty good, George. What a show tonight.
Oh, my gosh. And there's Richard. There you go, Richard. There you go.
Things will really heat up now that Joseph has joined us.
Oh, yes. And Richard, you wanted Joseph here for a specific reason. Tell me why.
Well, Joseph is probably the expert on the planet on the beginnings, the entree point, the way to ferret out the real truth on the secret space program. What is so eerie, I mean, I have to thank Tim Ventura for introducing us to each other. I mean, he did me one hell of a favor when he basically said one day, there's this guy, Joseph Farrell, that wants to talk to you. Do you want to talk to him? And I talk to anybody. So I said, sure. And it was the greatest thing that's happened to me in the last couple of years, because Joseph is, A, exquisitely professional when it comes to research. He knows how to dig. He knows how to ask the right questions. He knows how to cross-correlate. He's not confused. He doesn't depend on sources. He goes to documents, evidence, things you can taste, touch, smell, feel, and count on. And it's amazing how his research, from a completely independent perspective, I mean, we hadn't really talked to each other up until about a couple of years ago, has totally tallied on this Nazi, what do they know and when do they know it stuff, and the foundations of the real secret space program. And this latest set of insights into von Braun and what he found out, and then how he was muzzled, again, fits perfectly into Joseph's independent assessment.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I have to second your statement at the start of the show that this probably is one of the most important coast-to-coast shows that you've ever done, because, again, I think our research has been dovetailing in ways that neither of us could have even coordinated had we had a mind to.
And there's a third guy who's not in the conversation but is here with us tonight, and that's Jim Mars.
Oh, yes.
Who was just on with me last week.
Exactly, and we both listened, and it's eerie how Jim has put the political pieces on the table in play.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's scary when you think that we basically won the battle of World War II, and we may have lost the war because the Nazis have cleaned our clock, and they're the hidden hand behind so much of this that we can now document and prove and will stand up in the light of day.
Well, you know, after witnessing Richard and Joe, these UFOs that I saw several weeks ago with these night vision goggles, now I'm convinced that there's a very high likelihood of a bigger secret space program.
Yep. Now, by the way, let me correct something I said earlier in the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
Rama didn't see the boomerang with the glasses. She saw it with her naked eye.
Ah.
They all did.
Okay.
And, you know, because I wasn't there, I was Sasha sitting, and I was minding the store here, so I didn't get to go down and have fun. But, yeah, this thing was floating silently over the city of Albuquerque, broad as you know, whatever you want to call it, and illuminated by the lights of the city shining up, and they saw it with their naked eye.
All right. Now let's get into it. Plus, I want to talk with you, Richard, about NASA, you too, Joseph, what we're doing on Mars, and if this program is truly giving us the information we want or if they're holding that back. But let's take a little step backward, Joseph, for a moment and pick up where Richard was talking to us about their discovery here. Why is it important that in this discovery of anti-gravity, this kind of effect, did this lead into a secret space program, or were they headed in that direction anyway?
Oh, I definitely think it leads into a secret space program. I was on Coast last year talking about my book, The SS Brotherhood of the Bell.
Right.
And I've got two more books in press right now with two different publishers that continue this story. So it's a story that really kind of goes on and on once you get into it. But basically, what I came to the conclusion was, in my examination of the Nazi secret weapons projects, is that we already see the glimmers back in the Third Reich of a two-track space program being set up. On the one hand, you have von Braun and his rocket team with the V-2s and V-1s and so on. And that's kind of the public secret space program because, obviously, it had a very visible effect. You've got V-2s raining down on London and Paris everything else. So, you know, people were definitely aware that the Nazis had pressed this technology beyond anybody else at the time. But then with the Bell, you have very specifically, in my opinion, a project that deals directly with hyperdimensional physics, with anti-gravity, with so-called zero-point energy, and so on and so forth. And the key to this project is that there is some very peculiar personnel overlap, at least the key in terms of what we're discussing tonight. For example, one of von Braun's team members at Peenemünde was a fellow by the name of Dr. Kurt Davis. I have a picture of him in the SS Brotherhood of the Bell with von Braun. Davis was actually not a rocket engineer at all. He was an electrical engineer. And he's the fellow that built the power plant for this Nazi anti-gravity device called the Bell. And he was also a member, therefore, of the Bell's research team. So he's one of these indicators. And the significant thing about him, George, is that he ends up as a flight director for NASA during the Apollo moonshot program. He's right there.
Well, Joseph, he's more than that. He is made the center director of the entire Cape Kennedy launch complex.
Right.
For the entire U.S. civilian space program.
Right. So this is a very significant Nazi.
And now, speaking of Nazi, tell them how much a Nazi Kurt Davis was.
Well, he was a real Nazi. reason we know about him is because he actually denounced, and in fact, one of the reasons we know even about the Bell Project is that we have documents that he denounced a fellow co-worker in the Bell Project to the Gestapo. And this is all in his file. It's part of his paperclip file, you know. So he was, you know, he was definitely part of the team, so to speak, back there in the Third Reich. He was certainly not one of these people that joined the Nazi Party just because that's what everybody else was doing.
Or they were forced to.
Right, exactly. So, you know, this man achieves a very senior position within NASA, as Richard has indicated, and yet he's also one of these very few scientists that we bring over here and make part of our public space program that definitely had his hands in a project that was dealing with some of this hyperdimensional anti-gravitation physics. So we know that for a fact, but there's yet another Nazi that I've recently discovered through some research that my friend Igor Witkowski over in Poland has shared with me, that he's publishing in a German edition of his book, The Truth About the Wunderwaffe. And that is that one of the medical people that worked on the medical aspects of the Bell Project, how to limit the effects of the field that it gave off on living plants, animals, and presumably
sure.
human beings, one of these people was Dr. Hubertus Strughold. Now, anybody who does research in NASA will soon find out that Strughold was one of these, you know, barbarous people that performed some of these grisly medical experiments in Nazi Germany.
He was like Mengele without the rep.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh.
Good way of putting it. But he comes over here and basically kind of pioneers our space medicine effort.
He
so,
becomes
you know,
head of the space medicine branch
right.
of the, I think, Brooks Air Force Base in Texas.
Right. So, you know, here we have another Bell scientist that has a prominent position within NASA after the war.
I guess better us than the Soviets at the time.
Well, yeah, you know, this is the other part of the puzzle. And, you know, I've one of these books that I've got at press now I try and make the case that the Nazis kept this anti-gravity technology to themselves after the war as part of a very complex strategic evacuation plan that actually had been cooked up by Martin Bormann.
So, you know, jeez.
Yeah, you know, this story just never ends.
It's a story, George, that keeps on giving.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Because
it really
the way
does.
It keeps giving is every time you open a new door or turn up a new document, you find these cross linkages.
Yes.
You find these double agendas.
Yes.
You know, it's like the Nazis we brought over here to work for us, we wound up working for them.
Yeah.
And they had an agenda, a long-term agenda, which I frankly think, based on my own work, on Joseph's work, on Jim Marr's work, is now coming to fruition.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it in the form of these vehicles that are bold as brass and are flying over major American cities and over George Bush's Western White House in Texas, the so-called Stevensville incident. I think it was one of ours, except it's not ours. It's
yeah.
This mysterious third force that Joseph and Jim and I have now started calling the Nazi International, that is a continuity of the guys we thought we buried 60 years ago.
Could belong to the so-called New World Order, right?
Yeah, well, that's what the New World Order is.
Yeah,
exactly.
You
know, let's call a Nazi a Nazi.
So, Joseph, you are convinced, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that they have anti-gravity propulsion.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because, you know, one of the things that Richard makes clear in these papers, and he's been kind enough to share part two with me before he's posted it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he makes very, very clear, and you really have to sit down and read through these papers very carefully, is that the physics of conventionally explaining what happened to Explorer 1 simply does not work. It has to be something else other than the rockets, and he fingers it very, very precisely. And it's amazing to me because, once again, we've kind of backed into each other in our research because, you know, we're like two guys with
independent confirmation.
Yeah, in a darkened room with flashlights, you know, and we keep bumping into each other because I found the same thing not only in this wartime Bell project, but I have been able to document similar physics being researched by the Nazis after the war. So, you know, it again, over and over and over again, you find the same physics conceptions, and I have to agree wholeheartedly with Richard here. It's not just the sources you have to pay attention to, but when the sources give clues to the physics, that's really what tells you the story. You kind of have to piece this together very, very carefully, bit by bit. But I come to the same conclusion, coming from a very different point of view, that Richard has, and that is sometime during this period that he's talking about in the Von Braun papers, there's something else going on covertly behind the scenes, both inside and outside of NASA, and it's being run by a bunch of these Nazis. So,
when you start looking at the NASA program that came into play after the early satellite launches,
right?
And again, we're not talking about just one, we're talking about three Navy satellites, the Vanguards, and three Explorers. So we got a total of six of these early satellites until they figured out
right.
What they were doing, quote, wrong, and then it really goes black. It really becomes sub rosa.
Why the need for the secrecy?
Well, this is all they wrote, George. This is the keys to owning the Earth.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
If you have, and let me foreshadow what is in part two. Because it turns out that not only did Von Braun inadvertently trip over anti-gravity that night with his Explorer launch, what he really did was to trip over free energy,
yes,
a way to technologically pull energy out of another dimension,
yes,
and stuff it into these spacecraft so that it would wind up in much bigger orbits. And the orbits are the fossil evidence of free energy on a humongous scale.
Yes.
And what I'm going to lay out in part three of the series, remember, part two is written and I'm going to post it after the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Part three is going to be how this can be done by anybody in your own garage. You can do this. and the absolutely incredible practical effect it will have on your everyday life. And believe me, that's a third part worth waiting for, because it doesn't have to do with rockets and rocket science and weird Nazis. It has to do with bread-and-butter economics and the reason we don't have to pay for $4.50 a gallon gas.
Are we talking about zero point?
Well, that's one of the names. Yeah. What's in a name? Shakespeare. We're talking about energy from another dimension that can be put to use in this dimension, and that's what they were really covering up. Anti-gravity is kind of one closet in a whole mansion of things they don't want us to know about, because if we knew about it and could use it, we would no longer be under their control.
That's right.
It's all about control.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me second that for a minute, George, with some information about what I've uncovered
sure. In
this recent book. I just sent it off, as a matter of fact, a couple days ago to the publisher. That's how new this is. But I ran into a similar thing, and you mentioned yourself, George, the idea of a third force. Well, it's interesting that whenever you find the post-war Nazis active in the world politically after the war, you will find dictators that they're propping up or sponsoring, such as Juan Perón or Gamal Abdel Nasser in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
You will find them talking very openly about this third position between capitalism and communism. And dig long enough, and you will find a bunch of Nazis hovering behind the scenes. Now, interestingly enough, in one of these post-war Nazi research projects investigating precisely the physics that Richard is talking about, you inadvertently find all of a sudden it's made public, and then every attempt is made to discredit the project openly in public, and it goes deeply black once again.
Right.
And scratch and sniff long enough around that project, and you find a bunch of Nazis hovering in the background.
Now, the original paperclip Nazis, are they all dead?
No.
So there's still some that are out there.
I mean, I've had some, shall we say, nibbles from people that represent them. I had one particularly interesting nibble from a very responsible scientist who was chief of a laboratory at a major university that had access to these German Nazis, and he actually dangled that in front of me.
They got to be 80, 90 years old
by now.
They're
in their 80s and 90s, and I have not heard peep one from this individual. He contacted me after he heard me teasing the von Braun paper and this program a couple weeks ago on the show. And I think it was, I've had several of these, how should we say, feelers from people who offered to review the papers before we published so they could, quote, capture any mistakes. And these obviously are plants of people that wanted to know, have a heads up in what we had figured out so they could communicate with the guys behind the scene who've been trying to stub their fingers in the dikes and keep this covered up for 50 years, because it's blatantly obvious once you look at it. And, you know, remember, Joseph is not a member of the choir. He and I have some really interesting toe-to-toe arguments where we do not agree on certain things.
Right.
So I used him as a sounding board. I said, find the holes in this. Tell me where I've gone wrong. Tell me where I haven't backed up what I've backed up.
And let me add something to that, too, George. When Richard says that he's been contacted by some of these people, I've experienced very similar things. So, you know, it's not something that is peculiar.
It's not isolated to him.
No, it's not. And, you know, it's very, very strange when you start delving into this. And I think the key for both of us is that we've figured out that there is a Nazi angle that is active and in play in this stuff. And that's probably, you know, it's frightening to contemplate that. But I think that's probably the concern politically for why these contacts are being made.
Well, this brings us back to Jim Marr's book, which could not have been more perfectly timed.
Right on.
More perfectly timed.
Right.
Hopefully he's listening to that, or his ears are burning.
Well, and I was going to say, for you here, Joseph, because we've heard Richard on this, but if NASA's listening tonight, and I'm sure they are they cringing right now?
Well, yes. I think they are. Because, again, you can't read this paper and come away, particularly once you get into part two, you can't come away with any other impression than that this stuff is experimentally validated. So, you know, this is the big problem. And, you know, the means of validating it are so incredibly simple that, you know, it almost boggles the imagination. but it points to the existence of a technology. And if that technology exists that can experimentally verify this with such simple means, then certainly in 60 years they've had time to do a whole lot more with it.
Joseph and Richard, let's go to Mars when we come back. Little program note for you. I got to whittle off a couple Fridays here for vacation days, use it or lose it. But also, we will have a live program for you Monday night, Labor Day night, okay? We will be here. No holiday for us. On deck, Richard Hoagland, Joseph Farrell. Richard, you've got an email or so from some folks that you wanted to read to us.
Yeah, as I was saying, one of the reasons for putting up this paper series is to try to smoke some of the old-timers, the old guys that worked with Von Braun, the early space program, with Vanguard, with the early parts of NASA, the honest people out of the water so they remember things. They connect. They go back in their own history and say, oh, my God, I didn't. And they kind of put those dots together. This is what happened with Ken Johnston when we met. A lot of stuff that he saw going on at NASA in terms of hiding things and being ordered to destroy photographs of the artifacts on the moon and all that, he did not remember until he'd read Monuments and we'd had conversations and he went back over his own life. In fact, he's actually doing his own book now on many other things that he has remembered. But at the time, there was just too much going on and he wasn't really paying that much attention. All these professionals were so busy, busy, busy in this incredibly hectic historic period when we were desperately trying to outgun the Russians. From this position to number two, you know, you don't work any harder than if you're number two and you thought you were number one. The psychology was perfect, but it made all these people kind of ignore and just cast a blind eye to the weirdness that was going on.
Yeah.
That they just kind of rationalized. So I'm trying to get these folks to remember. And we hit real pay dirt with this email, which I've shared with Joseph, which came in through a very trusted source. I've known this source now for 20-some years. This is a friend not only of the source, but it turns out that I've known this individual separately for about the same period of time. So I know absolutely that this is 100% for real.
Okay.
Says, I've just now finished the read, meaning of part one, even though it's a long one. Funny, but I had forgotten completely the trigger that went off in my brain as we watched the world hold its breath waiting for word over San Diego. He's talking about Explorer 1.
Right, right.
I didn't fall for the solid rocket high-SP fluke story for a minute. As we were mixing solid propellants for Mighty Mouse at SUSE, those are code words, at the time. At that time, I didn't care about orbital mechanics and errors. Quote, I push, you steer the canoe was our motto, for Von Braun's team anyway, and never did. Even Dr. Rydell, the VW mechanic, that's another individual. But I do remember visiting our NAA navigation and orbital mechanics guys one afternoon and discovering they were working on some new top-secret recalculations of celestial mechanics for Apollo, just as they had completed all the initial work. Boy, were they pissed. This message could be a book of my own, but it's late, and I'm just to the point of offering one itsy bit for Hoagland to consider. He covered the U.S. Army, the Navy, the USSR situations very well, interweaving the dots with hard factual documentation, and all the dates fit perfectly as I remember them. But, and there is always one but, he ignored the physics leak of Allais' discovery by von Braun to his countrymen in S.A., that's South America, George, guests of the Rocky Plantation, and Joseph will explain what that means in a minute. That's why he, meaning von Braun, never talked about it, even until his death, as Hoagie puts it. My congratulations to Hoagland on an excellent investigative report, signed blank.
What's the Rocky Plantation, Joe?
Okay, George. In the new book that I finished up, it's called The Nazi International. And I talk about a research project that the Nazis were conducting in and close to San Carlos de Bariloche, which is in Rio Negro province. It's about 900 miles southwest of Buenos Aires. But more interestingly, if you get into the documentation, what you'll discover is that all sorts of Nazis went to this province of Argentina. They bought more than 10,000 square miles which is about the size of the state of Massachusetts, for themselves. So in other words, they made it kind of a post-war Nazi Vatican. And there's even allegations that Martin Bormann was present in the area after the war in that particular area. But if you look at the pictures of this area, it's very remote, it's very rocky, it's very mountainous. And, you know, there's just so much here. But one of the things that really stuck out at me was this research project was ostensibly being conducted by the Perón government. But I suspect when it became public, due to a precipitous announcement by Perón, that the secret Nazi masters of this project deliberately discredited it in the eyes of the world press, and it went deeply black once again. So in other words, I think that this email is definitely authentic because of this allusion to this particular area of Argentina with that rocky plantation. And the plantation itself is a very significant clue, because if you get into the literature, if you dig into what's going on down there in Argentina, this Nazi enclave was called Estancia. In other words, a big ranch, a big plantation. So in other words, you know, the reference to me is extremely direct.
And again, I know this guy. I know the source, and I know the guy, the engineer who wrote to him, and I actually have his email, and I'm going to, you know, I've asked him some questions, but I have to be very careful because I obviously don't want to get him into trouble. And I asked him, George, to come on the show, and he said he actually didn't want to do that for his health.
Of course, we know what happened to Ken Johnson when he tried to come on.
Well, yeah.
Remember that?
And remember, we're dealing now with probably two orders of magnitude more serious stuff here. Remember, once you have demonstrated that orbits are not Newtonian or Einsteinian, that celestial mechanics does not work the way those old theories have told us, you know, they've worked for hundreds of years, that have been the Bible of mainstream science, then all bets are off. What this demonstrated to those that had eyes to see, and is still up there, as I said, these things are still cruising around the Earth in orbits that won't come down for thousands of years. What it proves to anybody that knows anything about rocket science is that something bizarre went on that cannot be explained by any physics that we think we know, opening the door to all the physics that we don't know.
So you don't think, though, Joseph and Richard, that whatever they picked up was based on reverse-engineered alien technology?
No.
That's another scam story.
I don't.
It's another red herring.
The reason I don't, George, is many people have tried to convince me that the Nazi Bell project was, in fact, based on recovered reverse engineered craft.
And Mars writes about that, Jim Mars.
But the problem is that when you try and trace down these stories of Nazi crash and retrieval efforts, there's just really no documentation. It's not even on the same scale at all as a Roswell or a Keksberg incident. So, no, at least in the case of the Nazis, I'd have to give a firm no to that.
All right. Now, Richard and Joseph, let's talk about Mars for a little bit. We're almost at the top of the hour in 15 minutes. Anything new there, Richard? Are you happy with what the Phoenix lander is doing?
He's a Pope Catholic. Anything new there? Good grief. You know better than to ask me that.
That's the way I prompt you.
With an hour and 50 minutes left in the show?
Yeah.
Guys. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop. I had a call last night from, again, one of these very reliable intel sources. Remember, I was told weeks ago that there had been a secret briefing of the White House and of the Obama and the McCain campaign on the discovery by NASA of life on Mars. And then my old friend Greg Cavalt, who is a senior editor now with Aviation Week, published a story a couple weeks ago. And then NASA quickly rushed out another press conference claiming that, oh, that's not what we were going to talk about. This is what we're going to talk about. You know, misdirection. Never a straight answer, NASA. Well, this source called me last night, had been on a mission somewhere, I have no idea where, except his butt ached a lot because he'd been sitting for 20 hours in some airplane with a whole bunch of other guys in uniforms. And he reaffirmed that initial briefing did take place. Now, let's flash forward. Suddenly, remember how candidate Obama was very negative about NASA in the beginning of the campaign?
And he changed his tone.
He was going to raid NASA for money for education. He was going to basically put the Bush plan to go back to the moon and onto Mars on hold for 5 years. Well, I would like to claim credit by means of my white paper, which is on Enterprise, which we know was personally delivered to him and to McCain and to Hillary and to Bill, because Robin actually gave it to Hillary and Bill here in Albuquerque when they came during the primary season. I'd love to claim credit that our paper is the thing that convinced him to turn 180 degrees on space, on NASA, but I don't think that's what happened. I think it was that he was given information, which is so mind-blowing, that will be obviously first on the docket of his administration if he is elected this fall, and that's why he's now suddenly coming out four square for billions of dollars more for NASA, closing the gap between the retirement of the shuttle and the new spacecraft, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which is an absolute 180-degree about-face from his previous position, obviously based on him getting new information. Space is really important. Now, I told the Libertarians when I spoke at their convention a couple, 3 months ago, that NASA was going to, before the election, announce life on Mars. I still think we're on track that they're going to announce that there are at least microbes in the soil. So what happened the other day, George? We had Chandra Wickramasinghe, the friend and colleague of Sir Fred Hoyle, who came out. He's a physicist with Cardiff University in Britain. He's one of the major astrobiologists on the planet.
He's investigating this red rain.
He investigated the Kerala red rain. We don't have a definitive report there, by the way, which would be interesting if Linda could kind of press the pedal to the metal and find out what's going on there. Chandra Wickramasinghe came out the other day, published in the BBC, that NASA is hiding current life on Mars. Now, you know, for someone who's been out here in the wilderness all these years basically saying, folks, they're lying to you, they don't tell you the truth, to have someone of Chandra's stature who worked with Sir Fred Hoyle, who really should have gotten a Nobel Prize for his work on nuclear astrophysics years ago, decades ago, to have Chandra come out and basically say, A, it's there, and B, they're hiding it, that's pretty damn cool. So we've got these separate independent lines of evidence. You know, Covault, my intel source, the data itself. You know, we've got soil on Mars where you can grow asparagus. Remember that?
I remember that.
So it's only a matter of time. Now, what's going to happen after that shoe falls? Well, all hell is going to break loose. That is going to be the final straw that brings this entire camel crashing down, mixing our metaphors, Natalie, because all the things they've been covering up, once you open the door to life, any kind of life, just the teeny tiniest little bit of life, you've opened the door to the potential for bigger life and crinoids and fossils and, oh my God, Martians, which brings us back to Nazis. Joseph?
Well, you know, this is the whole thing with the Nazis. You know, von Braun wrote his Mars Project book back in the 50s and 60s. But there's this obsession with Mars itself in the ancient literature and ancient texts. And, George, I'm convinced that part of the Nazi impetus for exploring this alternative physics was precisely their conviction that, number one, you know, they, as Aryans, were descended from a celestial race that came to this earth and moved into Europe from the north. And I'm also convinced that they conceived or at least dedicated a part of their thinking about space missions to the recovery of some of these ideas, you know. And when I read Dark Mission, I was sort of floored, you know, that this was more or less the same conclusion that Richard had come to in examining all the evidence, you know, and kind of reverse engineering the history of the project. So, again, we're bumping into each other as we're both shining our flashlights in this very dark room, you know.
I mean, our conclusion in Dark Mission, Mike's and mine, Mike Barra, my esteemed co-author that you spent an entire weekend with, would probably tell you all kinds of interesting things about me, which are not true.
The singing? Whoa, wait a minute.
Well, that was one thing that was true. Our conclusion was that NASA and the Nazis in NASA have hidden all this stuff because, wait for it, they believe they're the Martians.
Yeah.
They want to go home. That's why von Braun was writing all those books about Mars. That's why he was fascinated, enthralled, stupefied by the discovery of his own satellite that he had tripped over some extraordinary physics that would give him an independent means of getting to Mars.
Well, if they listen to Bob Zubrin, they'll terraform it, and off he goes.
Well, it already was terraformed. They're just waiting to turn the lights on. There's all kinds of stuff there. Don't you get it, George? There is an incredible planet of ruins left by someone that these guys, the Nazis, feel that they are the only appropriate, sole, rightful heirs apparent to, and we don't count. And what they did is they crafted a set of secret programs so they can go back, they can get access, and to hell with the rest of us.
Yeah, and let me add something to that, George. It's been one of my convictions for many years that if you're going to pull off a project like what Richard is describing, very similarly to what I believe actually happened, you would use the security compartmentalization of your host country against them to cloak your activities, because you still maintain a network of contact between each other, and certainly these Nazis had it. In fact, one of the early paperclip documents that examines the Germans, specifically with reference to von Braun and Dornberger, complains of the fact that even after their capture and internment by the Americans prior to their coming to this country, there still seemed to be an existing chain of command in place among them. So, in other words, we have to open up the possibility, and I do this in the new book, that this post-war Nazi network was very well organized and did manage to stay in contact with each other. And I think probably what happened in this country is they simply infiltrated our own black projects and secretly coordinated among them.
Amazing stuff. Do you believe, Richard C., someone continues to write about vegetation on Mars? Is it there?
Depending upon which Thursday you ask me, yes or no.
Really? You change your mind on that?
No. It depends on how big a plant. I mean, a microbe is vegetation.
Well, you know, I'm talking about, they're talking about trees.
Well, I don't know about the trees part, but I think there may be some kind of ground growth or algae or whatever. Remember that photo that was taken by ESA, the Europeans, the Mars Express photograph, Linda was able to get one of the top project guys to basically say, well, it's green, it looks like algae,
mm-hmm.
and the next day the photograph was changed and all became brown.
It was gone, yeah.
Look, the Nazis are everywhere. And, you know, why has it become a kind of a throwaway line to talk about Nazis? They become the, you know, Saturday Night Live buffoons of comedy. These mass killers who have done more systematically to destroy human life and the human future than any other group in history, the communists notwithstanding. Because when you look through the eyes of Jim Mars and his documentation, it turns out that these guys also set up the Soviet Union. They set up the communists. They set up the whole, Iron Curtain, et cetera, et cetera. They played both ends against the middle and took us all for suckers, and they're still doing it. And the higher-level purpose, I believe, based on the data, they have been trying to get home. It's kind of like E.T., you know, phone home. They've been trying to get home, and this, of course, is the reason for von Braun's extraordinary obsession through his entire life and career. And I think the thing that killed him is when he realized toward the end of his life in the 70s, after we'd achieved Apollo, that he was not in the in crowd and would never be allowed to go home.
What did you think of his remarks to his aide, Carol Rosen? And that
That's going to be in part three. And I needed to put part one and two up. And, of course, part two will be posted later tonight. And people also need to read
Dark Fate. But he believed in a false flag.
He believed there would be a false flag alien intervention scare scenario. Mm-hmm. Now, the only way that von Braun could have known that was at two levels. Either he was directly told that this was on the plan, this was on the agenda,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that he was high enough in whatever hierarchy there was to actually be privy to that kind of information.
You might be right.
In fact, tonight I had a flash of insight, and I shared it with Joseph before we went on the air. I think Kurt Debus was basically sent with him as part of Paperclip to be his minder, yep. since he was a highly visible leader of one of the black projects that became white, i.e. the V2s, and they knew that he would be adopted into the American, you know, military system, and Debus was attached to him like a leech to make sure that he didn't give away whatever he might have known about the really good stuff, the anti-gravity stuff. And then, of course, he tripped over it as part of his own open military satellite program.
When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to chat with Richard C. Hoagland and Joseph Farrell about space.